Welcome to Death Holler, Season 5, When Bad Animals Go Bad. With your hosts, the Reverend Dr. Death and Lyraina. This season will include love.
Do you know how your husband died?
Oh, yes. I killed him.
Transformations. And certified good boys and girls.
Cujo, what are you growling at?
Remember, when you're in Death Holler, listener discretion is always advised.
Perfect, go bad, dang!
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, the Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Lyraina. Are you ready for some questionable special effects, tits, and bloody skeletons?
Absolutely not.
Well, too bad, because that's what you're getting ready to have. That's right, listeners. We are covering the Piranha franchise. Started as a quick money grab and ripoff of Jaws by Roger Corman, the films were revisited in the 2000s and given a horror comedy remake with plenty of TNA for visual stimulation. Given the sheer number of Jaw knockoffs that arrived in the late 70s and 80s, the fact that this franchise rose above the rest is a testament to how much people just like seeing gore and boobs. So throw back a cold one, grab some pool floaties, and whatever you do, don't fall out of the boat as we cover Piranha 3D from 2010 and 3DD from 2012.
What the fuck are floaties going to do?
They're going to keep you in the water while your legs are nibbled away. If you're enjoying the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would like take the time to like, comment, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you prefer. It helps us get more visibility on podcast listings and helps us grow. Also, consider following us on social media. You can find us on TikTok and Twitter under Death Holler Pod, and we can be found on Instagram and Facebook under Death Holler Podcast. We appreciate everyone who listens and hope you enjoy the show. First up, Piranha 3D from 2010. Tagline, this summer, 3D shows its teeth.
I mean,
yeah,
it really could be worse. Honestly, I had to rethink that for a second.
I mean, it could be, but I mean, that's still not great. Surprisingly, this movie was directed by Alexander Aja, which is the director, if I remember right, from High Tension, which is, that's a big change. Also, he did the remake for The Hills Have Eyes that were around this time period.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I guess it goes with the gore and stuff that we had in High Tension, but it's nowhere near as highbrow, I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
Written by Pete Goldfinger and Josh Stolberg, music by Michael Wanamaker, budget of $24 million USD. It did make 83. $24 million.
And it made 83. I'm sorry.
It made 83.
Yelling, and the listeners are probably like, shut up. I am shocked. Okay. I mean, 2040?
It does not look like a movie that should have cost $24 million.
No.
But there's a hell of a lot of CGI in the movie, so maybe that's where that was spent.
Yeah, but it's like Walmart CGI. I'm in.
I was getting ready to say it's not good CGI, and I'll get to that. Why, you know, in a comparison between this and the sequel, why I think the sequel's better because it actually uses the puppets, but it does have CGI. I mean, it does have it. So. Okay. And maybe to get some of these actors in the movie, because, I mean, that's who, you know, going into who we have in this, we have Elizabeth Shue, who plays Julie Forrester, playing the hot sheriff in the movie. She is obviously, you know, from Back to the Future, parts 2 and 3,
at least,
people of my generation. But she's also more recently in The Boys, if you're younger. She played the milk mama.
Yeah, she's the main female don't know why. I mean, I always knew I knew that actress. I'm having an epiphany right now. I'm sorry.
She's also in the movie Adventures in Babysitting, which is actually a fun little throwback 80s movie. She was the love interest in The Karate Kid, the original movie. And she was in Leaving Las Vegas because, well, you know, we always got to throw in a little bit of Nick Cage, you know, when we can. We have Adam Scott playing Novak, who is the who studies seismology. He's got kind of a minor role in this movie. He was in Parks and Rec. He's in the current show Severance, which if you've seen that on Apple TV, I was amazed by the first season, and the second season let me down so bad that I don't know that I even want to finish it out if they come out with a third one.
We need to talk about something. How the fuck do you have Apple TV? Did you get some kind of free trial?
No, I signed up for it to like watch some of the shows on there because people recommended them, and I was just really? Like, all right.
I am color me surprised.
Yeah, I mean, the ones that I watched were all right, but I mean, you know, Severance was my favorite of all of them. Actually, Ted Lasso was probably the best, but, you know, but Severance was really good first season. Second season, it dropped off tremendously, unfortunately. Yeah. And, of course, a movie we've already covered. Go back and re-listen to that if you want to. Krampus. Stephen R. McQueen plays Jake Forrester, who's the horny teenager and simp in this movie. He's from the Vampire Diaries, apparently. I've never seen that show. Jessica Zor plays Kelly, who is Jake's dream girl, but she's dream girl gone wild in this movie. You know, having makeshift margaritas off of some other girls' titties, I mean, at one point in the movie, so there's that. Jerry O'Connell plays Derek Jones in this movie, who is a wild, wild producer. I mean, he is basically the stand-in for the, you know, Girls Gone Wild producer scumbag. Been in a ton of stuff. Stand By Me, Sliders. I love the sci-fi show Sliders, at least the first couple of seasons. That show was really good. About parallel dimensions and how the world was different in each one of them. But he was in Scream 2, Scream Queens, Can't Hardly Wait, Scary Movie 5, and then, of course, we covered Satanic Panic a little bit on one of our very first seasons, so he was in that.
Yeah.
Kelly Brook plays Dani, the hot, wild, wild girl who's the brunette in the movie. She was in The Italian Job.
She's pretty popular. I'm guessing, I want to say she's British. I'm not sure.
I think she might be Australian, but it's something with an accent.
Yes, like something with an accent. And she did this fake ad for camel toe inserts. They were called camel shows. And I just remember her pronouncing puffy taco as puffy taco.
Puffy taco.
But yeah, so, and she's gorgeous. And I'm like, and she's like, hi, I'm Kelly Brook. And I'm like, I've never forgotten that ad, of course. Well, but
she is English, so there you go. It's okay. English, though.
Yes, and I think she's more popular in her area, but she's big out there.
She's gorgeous in this movie. I give her that. Of all the women in the movie, she stands out the most. Yeah. We have Riley Steele, who's actually a triple X porn star, playing Crystal in the movie, who's the blonde girl of the, you know, hot, wild, wild girls. It's pretty bad when an actress, not a mattress actress, but, you know, a legit one, you know, outshines you as being like hot when you're actually a porn star. But she does get shown up, I mean. But she shows everything in the movie, if that's, you know, that's your thing.
Kelly Brook is pretty big now in terms of an actress. Like, she, I'm guessing people would assume, to me, she just looks normal. Maybe a little bit slightly bigger than normal. I'm assuming they made her a plus size model now. She is fucking gorgeous. And I am jealous. She's even prettier than she was as a twig with boobs.
Well, that's saying something. That's good.
Yeah.
Sorry. We have Sage Ryan playing Zane Forrester, the youngest son of Julie. Brooklyn Proles playing Laura Forrester, the daughter of Julie. Christopher Lloyd playing Mr. Carl Goodman, who's a fish expert. Of course, Back to the Future trilogy again. He plays the bad guy in Dennis the Menace, the old scummy homeless guy. He was the bad guy in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Never heard of him.
He played Fester Adams in Adams Family movie and then Adams Family Values. And he was also in Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. I love Christopher Lloyd. I have since, I mean, you know, I was a kid and I watched Back to the Future. So, and then Ving Rhames plays Deputy Fallon, who is a badass martyr in the movie. I mean, it appears that he dies, but that's kind of retconned in the second, in the follow-up. He was in Pulp Fiction, Bringing Out the Dead, Dawn of the Dead, 2004, that we covered.
Yes.
And, of course, he's in the sequel, Piranha 3DD. We have Eli Roth, who's the wet T-shirt host, and loses his head. And then we have Richard Dreyfuss playing Matt Boyd, a drunk fisherman, in over his head at the beginning of the movie. And, of course, we just covered another movie he was in, which was Jaws. So there you go.
Okay, I was like, why do I recognize this bitch? Never mind, sorry.
Yeah, he's playing basically the same character. I mean, kind of. When a drunk fisherman accidentally opens an underground lake system, a prehistoric piranha returned to the surface and plagued the spring breakers on Lake Victoria. Will the local sheriff be able to save her community and her family, or will everyone end up as bloody chum? Titties are flopping, eyeballs are popping, and Derek lost his penis. There's something in the water. That is one of the worst parts of this movie. I mean, if you're a dude, like, I mean, you're sitting there and you're like, all right, I got all these tits everywhere. There is a scene where Jerry O'Connell, like, his big floppy CGI penis is, like, burped up out of one of these, like, you know, piranha's mouths right at the camera. And if you're watching it in 3D, God help you. I mean, but it, and I'm like, really? Did we really need that? But then they wanted up it in the second movie and it's not even CGI. Like a prosthetic.
Yes. I was just going to say, what is up with wieners getting bitten off in this fucking movie? Plural. And it gets even worse with what happens in the second movie, but we're not there. So.
Yeah. We'll get into that. But yeah, it's, and all he say it, his like legs are completely gone. They're nothing but skeletons. But all he could say is, they took my penis. They took my penis, which is pretty funny. I mean, will admit.
For most guys, it's like, what do you have to live for after that? Because, like, even that, you know.
I mean, that's true. I mean, it. You know, you took the one thing that they can get a little bit of joy in life out of. So there you go.
Yeah. Question: that beer bottle really opened up the fucking piranha portal.
Well, if you watch the beginning of the movie, there's trash all over the bottom of Lake Victoria, and like it's been sitting there for years waiting just to break through, and the one bottle's like the, you know, the thing that broke the camel's back, basically.
Okay,
the straw that broke.
Okay, I was wondering, because I'm like, really? And then what was even funnier was it clinking all the way down. It's in the fucking water.
Yeah, and then the shitty CGIs, it's like going down and down, you know, and all that, so.
Yeah.
It's insane. Other taglines, sea, sex, and blood. That's from the French poster. Don't scream, just swim.
Don't scream, just swim. Okay, hold on. Back to the other one. Sea, sex, and
blood.
Blood. Oh, that's the French poster. Okay, that makes sense. It's France. And I'm like, that would be great. God damn it. Anthony. The closet door just opened and it's like and I was like, that would, I mean, it's good, but it would not work in America, but it's in France, so
2 million years of evolution, one perfect killer.
No, shut the fuck up.
This summer, how fast can you swim?
I like that one. I actually like that one.
Quotes from Julie Forrester: are you sure you can do this? And then Danny says, you better believe it. Climbing on the rope. Danny: I don't pole dance for nothing. Julie Forrester to Jake: you've got a lot of explaining to do, young man.
Oh, my God.
Andrew to crowd: when I say tit, you say ease. Tit, ease.
And that's right after he got asked who he was babysitting.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are you babysitting? When I say tit, you say ease.
Derek Jones: they took my penis.
Of course you added that.
Mr. Goodman to Julie: the piranhas that killed those divers, the ones you're hunting for, they're not fully developed. They're the babies. And Novak: the babies, huh? So where are the parents? And then, of course, that's whenever a huge piranha just jumps out of the water, takes his head clean off his shoulders, and then the movie ends. And that's how like how they end these movies. That somebody loses their literal head at the end of every one of these movies.
Oh, my God. The next one, Sailor was not a fan of.
I don't know if you've been a fan of this one, to be honest. All right, we'll get into it visually. I mean, the lake that they filmed at, wherever it's at, Arizona, mm-hmm. wherever, you know, like somewhere out west, it's a beautiful area. Yes. I mean, they did well with the underwater shots. I mean, especially, you know, if you're a guy and you're watching Crystal Steel swim naked, you know, but the CG is rotten in this movie.
Oh, God.
It is bad.
You have to have the amount of gorgeous bodies that you do in this film to make up for the fact that the remaining scenery, that what's supposed to be important, does not look great.
Now, I will offset that to say, besides the good-looking bodies in the movie, they also have good-looking visuals as far as the damage to the bodies. Like, yes. I mean, whenever people are, like, missing limbs or, like, they've been chewed down to nubs, like, skeletal nubs, they did good on that part.
I would say one of the first, not so much, because there was deep-sea divers that got, or deep divers, whatever, that got killed. Two of them got killed, and then there was another scene where some made it to a boat, and the body that they pulled onto the boat that had bite marks, or not even bite marks, bites taken out of it all over the body, I liked that.
Yeah, that's the same scene with the ones that went under the seismologist whenever he took them out. They were the ones that were investigating. The female makes it back to the surface, but she's basically dead when she gets on the boat. I mean, she's just been nibbled.
And then there was a guy that actually made it on the boat, and he looks to the left, and he's like, oh, my God, and he sees the body.
And then, of course, Derek, I mean, like, whenever his legs are, like, presented there, I mean, that's, you know, pretty good visuals. Yeah, but the CGI is just, I mean, it's bad. Like, that's one of the things that really dates this movie. I mean, because you could tell they didn't have the budget for good CGI, and it shows.
Yeah.
Story-wise, it's fairly simple. Spring break, you know, titties out, you know, and then, you know, they're filming A Girl's Gone Wild, and there's piranhas in the mix. I mean, that's classic drive-in movie setup. You got hot women and, you know, something killing people. That's it. Nothing really to write home about otherwise. I mean, don't expect anybody to really learn any lessons in the movie or any kind of, like, emotional or, you know, any kind of development, because you're not going to get it. I mean, you know, the main character, you know, Jake or whatever his name is, like the younger guy, Forrester, he does get with a girl at the end of the movie, but I mean, it's such short lived that you're not going to get anything out of it. So, acting wise, people do their parts all right. It's mostly for jokes anyways, yes. but there's nobody, I will say this, there's nobody in this movie that's like, when they're on screen, you're like, you know, when you get real bad B movies, you're sitting there and then somebody's like, oh no, what shall I do?
Oh yeah.
And then they'll, you know, there's nothing like that. People do deliver their lines. They do put the proper emphasis, like whenever they're supposed to be scared or freaked out or what. So there's no bad acting. It's just, it's not a movie where you're getting, you know, major, you know, acting chops anyway.
Nobody won an award.
Yeah. But people did make it. I mean, they were reacting appropriately to the scenes, and there's nobody acting so terribly that it stands out. So there's that. Music wise, it's a lot of like poppy rock music, you know, spring break type stuff. It fits.
Mostly, I mean, it's generic, but it's not bad. I mean, it's not music where I'm like, this fucking sucks, you know?
Yeah, it's nothing that's going to stand out, but it's also nothing that's like, so, you know, cause like I always go back to when we review those Japanese ghost films where it's like, okay, you're expecting like this real creepy music and it's just some kind of like poppy, like sweet melody. And it's like, this does not fit this whatsoever. Yeah. You get what you expect out of this movie. So it's fine. Bit of trivia for this, director Alexander Aja planned to have Joe Dante, the director of the original 1978 Piranha, and James Cameron, the director of Piranha 2, The Spawning, play boat captains who give safety lessons to teens. Dante wanted to do it, but Cameron was too busy. Probably he might have been filming around 2010. I don't know when Avatar came out. He might have been in the process of deciding to do Avatar at that time. I don't know. Kelly Brook and Riley Steele spent 2 weeks training for their nude synchronized underwater swimming set piece. So there you go.
I mean, good for them. It looks good.
It does. I mean,
it is definitely art. So,
Kelly Brook auditioned with an American accent. This deeply disappointed Alexander Aja, who called her back and asked her to speak in her natural English accent. He felt that the character would be much more appealing if Brooke played her in her normal voice.
So, I concur. You know.
The production crew estimated that 75,000 gallons of fake blood were used each day.
Jesus. Wait. Do we recall how much was used in Jaws? And I can go back and look, but
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay. Anyways, as you were.
Girls Gone Wild mogul Joe Francis wrote a letter to producers saying he was angry at the film because of Jerry O'Connell's character, who owns a site called Wild Wild Girls, which is a spoof of the adult video line, and that he might take legal action if any defamatory or disparaging statements or depictions in the media or the film itself or other statements portray Mr. Francis in a false light. After seeing the movie, he went on to say, "I appreciate a good parody as much as the next guy, but to associate me with drugs and the filming of underage girls crosses a definite line."
Sir, you went to prison.
Francis said Jerry O'Connell has repeatedly and emphatically stated on the public record that he's playing Joe Francis, not a fictional character based on me. Mr. O'Connell had done this despite having been warned by his own lawyers not to admit this. In response, O'Connell said, "I get to play Joe Francis. Oh, wait, for legal reasons, I'm supposed to say I play someone loosely based on Joe Francis."
Oh, my God.
I don't think the guy who started Girls Gone Wild has any right to claim any moral authority on anything. I'm just throwing that out there.
I'm with you on that one.
1,112 boats were used for the Spring Break Massacre set piece.
Jesus.
Maybe that's where all the money went, was on the boats.
Yeah, the boats.
When Richard Dreyfuss was interviewed about the film, he explained, "I don't know anything about Piranha other than the work I did on the film. I worked for 2 days in the middle of the desert, got my check, and then I left. I didn't understand 3D in the 50s, and I can't say it. I get it now either. I just don't see what the big deal is."
You know what? And we commend you, sir. You did a very good job, and, you know, it was good to see him.
Yeah. A good tie and callback to the big, you know, monster movie that spawned all these. No cuts were demanded by the MPAA, surprisingly.
Nice.
Ask about her underwater sequel to Riley Steele. Kelly Brook said, "It was really difficult holding your breath while making out with someone as hot as Riley Steele. I had to learn to hold my breath for a very long time." Brook also said that the pair had to have a lot of practice before filming that scene. You bring that to whatever you want. During the climax, special makeup effects supervisor Greg Nicotero can be briefly seen carrying the top half of a body onto the beach.
Nice.
Adam Scott told an interviewer that making the film was like being in Apocalypse Now, not based on the enjoyable experiences of working with a cast or with Alexander Aja, but because it was brutally hot on set in Lake Havasu City, Arizona. Elizabeth Shue responded to being told of Scott's comments with, "I'm glad he said that."
Yeah, exactly.
The Spring Break Massacre set piece took 9 days to film. The film was shot in 2D and converted to 3D using Real-E-D conversion. Process developed by the company.
That's how you pronounce it. Reality.
Reality. There you go. And it was developed by the company InnerD. Unlike other 3D converter films, this film was always planned to be 3D.
Okay.
Hence, Jerry O'Connell's penis going at the screen in front of your face.
I am so glad I did not watch in 3D.
Alexander Aja cast all of the Spring Break extras. That's a good job to have, I guess.
Oh, no.
Eli Roth woke up after a day, full day of shooting his part with his eyes completely bloodshot and his vision blurry, and went to a local doctor in a panic. The doctor amusedly asked Roth if he'd been spending a lot of time in the sun and responded to Roth's confirmation that he'd simply gotten an irritation from having sunblock mixed with sweat getting to his eyes.
Oh, my God.
Ross switched to a different sunblock and had no problems for the remaining days that he had to play his part.
That's so funny. I've had that happen to me, but I didn't rush to the doctor. I'm just like, what's going on? And it's weird. It just glazes your eyes. It's hard to explain. You have to really rinse to get it out.
I could say something about eyes being glazed, but I'm going to move on from that.
Stop it.
Alexander Aja first met Kelly Brook at a restaurant where they were eating lunch. So, wow. I mean, I guess it'd be, you know, Hollywood or whatever, or wherever they might have been at, where it probably wouldn't be as common. But if you saw Kelly Brook walking in a restaurant around this time, the way she looked in this movie, I mean, and it's just some random restaurant. Like, she'd stand out like a sore thumb. I mean.
She's still so gorgeous, she would still stand out.
Website Mr. Skin posted the top 10 horror franchises with most female nude scenes on October of 2020. The list includes Witchcraft from 77, Friday the 13th from 49. Oh, it's number 49, yes. I guess. Hellraiser that's number of, I guess, female nude scenes that they had. So Witchcraft had 77, Friday the 13th had 49, Hellraiser has 24, Wrong Turn has 17, Piranha has 16, Hostel has 14, Silent Night, Deadly Night has 14, Halloween has 14, and Amityville 9. So there you go.
Wow.
Need to go back and watch Witchcraft, apparently.
No, you do not.
We've not covered witches yet, so that might still be on the table. Anyway, Stephen R. McQueen is the son of Chad McQueen from The Karate Kid. Elizabeth Shue was also in The Karate Kid. Legendary actor Steve McQueen is Chad's father and Steven's grandfather. That is crazy.
Yes.
You talk about nepotism, that's a nepo baby and a half right there. Yeah. Rob Hubel was considered for the role of Derek Jones. He would have fit that character. I mean, because if you've ever seen anything with him in it, he's got that cocky attitude, I mean, for days. So,
yeah.
Around 47 minutes, 30 seconds, Stephen R. McQueen, Jake Forrester, tells Jerry O'Connell that his mom is the sheriff in order to coax him to help his siblings who are stranded. Derek then says, all right, let's swing by the island, throw the minnows in the boat. Susie Grogan's team in the original release of Piranha 78 was her team was called the Minnows. So I guess there was a tie back there.
Okay.
Jerry O'Connell played Derek Jones in this and played Derek Feldman in Scream 2, as well as Richard Dreyfuss played Matt Boyd in this and played Matt Hooper in Jaws. So a little bit of tie back with names. And then finally, Adam Scott plays a character named Novak, a possible reference to Orca from 77, in which one of the characters has the same name. Both characters even get killed in both movies, except Novak gets killed earlier in the film by the Orca, while Novak in this film gets killed at the very, very end, right before the credits roll. So is this the movie that you said that you didn't exactly see all of?
I seen it a long time ago.
Okay.
And I didn't refresh it. And that was kind of a little bit of a downfall for the movie, because I watched 3DD and then I went to kind of do the kind of like movie clips to kind of catch up on this film. That's a big mistake. That was a big mistake.
Why was it a big mistake? Explain because for the audience.
Visually, the second one, even though it's not perfect, it is so much better.
Yeah, I agree with that.
A million times better. And they just did too much in this film. How many piranhas were there? Because weren't there a few more after this?
This and 3DD are the only ones I'm well aware of, because I mean, they kind of killed the franchise with 3DD when it didn't really do that well.
Okay. But other than that, this is going to be hard to rate, because these movies are supposed to be kind of bad. Or were they trying to take this serious?
No, they are not meant to be taken seriously at all. Even the advertising at the time, I never watched these when they first came out, but I remember them playing in the theaters.
Yes.
And when they came out, even the theater like commercials were like that. I mean, they were kind of targeting that old drive-in, like, this is a grindhouse shitty movie, but it's got tits and ass, you know, like that sort of thing. So
when it comes to storyline, it's good enough. You know, it's a little outward, especially in the next film. It's a little crazy how these piranhas come to be, but whatever. Obviously, the scenery, for the most part, the real scenery is very good. The music suits perfectly. It's a pretty decent, would we call this a B film?
Yeah, it's a B movie. It's not, even the original is a B movie.
It's like an A minus or a B plus movie, you know? I'd say it's a B plus.
So if we're giving it that kind of rating, I mean, yeah, I'd say just a solid B. I don't know that I would, you know.
Oh, no, I'm not giving it a letter rating. I'm telling what type of film it is, you know.
Oh, yeah. If you're talking like it's a little bit elevated over a B movie, so B plus type film. Yeah.
Yes, but no, in terms of actual rating, because of what it is, I would say it's pretty decent. If we're keeping it in the B class, I would give it a 3.5.
Okay.
It's pretty solid.
I'd keep it somewhere in that range, I guess. Although I personally think the second one is a little bit higher than that. So I would say that I would rate this one closer to a 3 for myself. You know what?
I'm changing my rating. I think 3 is a lot more appropriate.
Yeah, and then the 3DD, in my opinion, is 3.5, which is probably a hot take to anybody who's ever watched these, because clearly 3DD, I mean, you know, if you look at all the ratings and all that, it's like way down the scale. But, like, it's really the fact that they did not even attempt to use any, like, you know, like puppets in this movie, like at all for mm-hmm. the fish, like, and that CGI at the time, it might've been fine, especially if you had like the goggles on that kind of like, you know, minimized how bad it looks, but in the theater with the 3D and all that, but you watch it now on a regular TV, especially if you've got a good HD TV, the fish are just kind of, I mean,
look, I saw it on my phone and it looked awful. Okay.
yeah. They're not great. They're not great. No. So, but it's reasonable, and I mean, it's one of those movies that you crack open a beer, you know, whatever. It's like you're just sitting there eating, it's popcorn film. You're not going to get it. I mean, it's not like Jaws where it's like, you know, like this top end thing. It's nowhere near that. It's just, you know, let's have some fun. Let's, you know, just kill a few minutes. Let's watch this movie. That's
don't
basically
take it
what
too serious. It. You'll have a good time. I think it's a movie you absolutely should watch. I don't think it's one of those movies you should avoid. Don't wait for it to come out in the theater for any kind of special or anything, which, by the way, Paranorman is coming out 3D October 25th.
Cool. So, they're bringing it back.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that we get to go see that. But speaking of 3D movies.
Yeah, this is one that I had not watched this until probably a few years back, and I watched it and I'm like, all right, it's worth adding to my collection just to put in the rotation every once in a while. I mean, it's a fun little movie. It's one of those movies that just slipped past during this time period because there was a lot of remakes and a lot of other stuff going on around 2010, and a lot of it outshone this. I mean, I can't remember when the Texas Chainsaw remake came out, but I mean, you know, stuff like that was definitely, you know, going to outshine this. Yeah. I mean,
I want to say 2002. No, it was late 90s, wasn't it?
Let's see. What is this? The one? It might be 2013. Yeah, that's 3D. So okay. That's Texas Chainsaw 3D. So, yeah, it was around this time period, though, that a lot of that stuff was coming out. I mean,
yeah, so it had a lot of competition.
But
even it, that, I mean, look, if it's hard, I'm basic.
The Friday the 13th remake came out literally a year before this. So there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was, I think that's a damn good remake, just throwing that out there. So
it really was.
So, I mean, I'm glad that horror around this time, like, you know, caught, and like it, that's another thing that I don't like about modern times when it comes to horror. Like, we're getting a lot of good horror, don't get me wrong. And we've already talked about this on the last podcast. We're eating good, folks. But I feel like now we're in this time period where it's like very highbrow, very pretentious type stuff. We need a little bit of this to seep in there, you know, like, I mean, to, you know, some of the, just the throwback fun stuff to kind of offset it a little bit, because when you got A24 buying up Texas Chainsaw, which I don't know if you were aware of that, but they did.
Oh yeah. And A24 is so hit or miss. Like, some of their movies are really good, and then some of them are just like, what the fuck? This is an A24 film?
Well, and A20, that's the thing. A24 is accused of being pretentious, and they are. Like, somebody in the comments, and it was hilarious, to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre purchase, said, oh, so we're going to have a movie where a Leatherface stands in a field for an hour and a half running time, and at the end of the movie, we're supposed to get the subtle, quote-unquote, hint that there's family trauma involved.
Oh, my God.
Because, you know, that's what A24 does. I mean, everything that they've got has a built-in, like, and there's nothing wrong with that. I like those movies. But having a movie like this every once in a while is not bad either, to kind of throw in there to offset it. We got a little, The Monkey was kind of like this a little bit, which turned a lot of people off because they thought it was going to be all serious. So I guess we got a little bit of that, but, I mean, it wouldn't hurt to have a little bit more, you know.
Speaking of, my son just saw Weapons. this weekend, and he did agree that it was a little bit funny. And he was like, wait, you saw it? And I was like, no, I didn't see it. A friend of mine had seen it and Hen said that it was a little funny. He goes, yeah, should I spoil it for you? And I said, actually don't, because I think I might watch it. So
I actually heard some guys complaining about Weapons on a YouTube video that I was listening to. And I like the movie, but I can't disagree with what they were saying. It's like, you got this movie that's supposed to be all serious about these children. I mean, you know, being like disappeared. And so you would think that, you know, would set the tone, but then there's like so much comedy in the movie that it's like, okay, this movie's literally about missing children, but you made it light in places. Like, that does, you know, and I can't disagree with that statement, because it's got a lot more comedy in it than you would expect. But anyways, folks, that's what we thought of this movie. You know, join us in the next one for, you know, our thoughts on 3DD. And with that, peace be with you
and with your spirit.